This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
And hi, my name is...
You are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. You can stay tuned for an interview with WEF Jazz host Rick Schell, and who is one of the organizers for the Tom Jones Challenger League Baseball League. But first, disability news for the week of March 10th, 2025. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is planning an extensive study on the possible connection between autism and vaccines, despite many studies discrediting that theory. Advocates say the effort will waste government resources. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services confirmed that a study is in the works. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has spent years promoting a link between autism and vaccines, refusing to reject those views during his confirmation hearings. President Donald Trump has repeatedly said that he's open to anything and said that Kennedy would have his blessing to investigate the causes of the developmental disorder. In the speech to Congress last week, Trump said, quote, "Not long ago, and you can't even believe these numbers, one in 10,000 children have autism. One in 10,000, and now it's one in 36. There's something wrong, so we're going to find out what it is," end quote. Andrew Nixon, the HHS spokesman, has not responded to questions regarding how the study will be conducted, when it will begin, or if it was requested by Kennedy. However, the Washington Post reported that the CDC plans to use data from its Vaccine Safety Data Link, a database that uses electronic health records, to monitor vaccine safety. National autism advocacy groups have all said that vaccines do not cause autism. Advocates say that revisiting this research will divert resources that could discover new things about autism and improve the lives of people on the spectrum. Also, in addition to affecting funding, advocates worry that the involvement of the CDC in a study re-examining vaccines and autism will sow further doubt about vaccines. According to Zoe Gross, director of advocacy at the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network, quote, "The worst part is that by funding this study, the CDC sends the message that the government believes vaccines might cause autism. This will undoubtedly contribute to vaccine hesitancy, which is already dangerously high, and speed the spread of vaccine preventable diseases like measles, which are already circulating in the United States," end quote. Last week, the U.S. Senate confirmed Linda McMahon to lead the Department of Education, despite opposition from disability advocates concerned by McMahon's inadequate knowledge of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act and her plans for special ed. During confirmation hearings, the former wrestling person, McMahon, did not offer much knowledge regarding what IDEA promises students with disabilities and suggested to senators that oversight of special education should no longer be contained within the Education Department. McMahon also proposed moving the Education Department's Office for Civil Rights, which handles complaints of disability discrimination in schools, to the Justice Department. McMahon told senators that she wholeheartedly supports President Donald Trump's mission to abolish the Education Department and return education to the states. When asked who would enforce IDEA, McMahon said she supports maintaining funding for disability services and that, quote, "the programs have to have accountability," end quote. Katie Neese, CEO of the ARC of the United States, said after McMahon's confirmation, quote, "We will be educating the new secretary about the essential role the federal government has played in ensuring students with disabilities receive a free, appropriate public education consistent with the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act." Denise Marshall, CEO of COPAY, the Council of Parent Attorneys and Advocates, a nonprofit that advocates for the rights of students with disabilities and their families, said her group would lean on lawmakers to ensure that special education is upheld. Marshall said, quote, "We are focused on protecting rights and assuring that the administration takes its obligations to do so seriously. We will also push Congress to protect funding of all parts of IDEA, assuring funding remains connected to all of the requirements and oversight," end quote. And finally, a bill has been introduced to the Illinois Senate that, if passed, might allow healthcare professionals to end someone's life. The Assisted Suicide or End-of-Life Options Act is a bill that would allow doctors to end a patient's life in a, quote, peaceful manner. Disability advocates from Access Living in Chicago say the idea is dangerous to people living with chronic illness. According to Jules Good, a spokesperson with the Stop Assisted Suicide Coalition, quote, "I cannot overstate how dangerous this is. When I was at my lowest, if a doctor told me I could end this all, I would have. It's only through years, compassionate support and therapy and support that I'm able to stand here today and say I'm in recovery," end quote. And that's the news for this week. I have in the studio today Rick Schell. He's my guest and returning champion, actually. Rick has been at WEFT for how many
16 years now?
Is it 16 years?
Yes,
so
it
you're
is.
Old hand at this now. Doing a jazz show on Thursday morning, but yep. You're also very involved with Tom Jones Challenger League Baseball. And I don't know if I've asked you this question before, but how did you get involved with Challenger League?
That's a very good question, Vicki. It was back in 2009, and we all may remember an anchor in town, Dave Shaw.
Uh-huh.
And I knew Dave, and I retired that year after many years of working at the University of Illinois. And I got a call from Dave who said, "Hey, what are you doing in retirement?" And, you know, we talked, and he said, "I've got some interesting things if you're interested." And I said, "Sure." So we met, and he laid out several ideas, and the Tom Jones Challenger League was one of them, and he was co-chair of it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So Dave Shaw said, "Hey, this is something I think you love baseball. Come out, try it out." And I was a little intimidated at the time because I had no real connection to a lot of the players and their challenges that they had.
Right.
But after one night out there, I became not only very delighted to be part of it, but it became part of my life. So that's how I got into it.
Yeah, it's rare for somebody who doesn't have a direct connection to disability to jump into something like that. I really appreciate the work that you do because you are very passionate about it. And I know I can tell just from the way you talk about it that you love those kids and those families. And it just gives me hope that maybe other people in the state and the world will start feeling that same way.
That's a great way to say it. And, you know, when I went out there, I thought, well, I can learn and I can, you know, make this a worthwhile and constructive environment. I can teach some skills. But what I did not anticipate was how much I got out of it and how much the players, the children, the families gave back to me. And as you point out, you become part of a family. You really do.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about how long has been, has the time, you said started in 2009 or you joined in 2009?
Well, I joined in 2009.
Okay. So how long has the whole league been going on?
Well, many of you, if you're familiar with Tom Jones, you know about Tom Jones, and it's worth revisiting a little bit of his history. I'll speak about him for a minute, of course.
Of course.
Those who knew Tom, he used a wheelchair since the age of six, and He went on to earn 2 degrees at the University of Illinois, and he participated in basketball and track. Mm-hmm. He was a successful local broadcaster here in town, and he became a tireless advocate for those with physical cognitive challenges. And his dream, he loved baseball, and his dream was to create a league for those, that part of our population that didn't have an opportunity to enjoy and appreciate the game of baseball. So in 1998, he started the league, and it started with 8 players and one team, basically. And they went out and they scrimmaged. Tom passed away in 2008, and that was the year they renamed it the Tom Jones Challenger League in his honor. Mm-hmm. And since the inception of the league in 1998, we're going into our 27th season. We now have over 100 players and 10 teams, all with local sponsors. So that just gives you an idea of how the league has grown over the years. We play all of our games out at Ambucks Park in Urbana. And it's just been what I call serious joy. It's just a great, great experience. But to go from 7-8 kids, you know, and it was the community again. People like, I'll just compliment a few, Marilyn and Bob Abuel and Betsy Ryder. These were people that really worked with Tom to get the league off the ground. And then Dave Shaw came in along with Tom Gray, and Tom is one of our current co-chairs now. Mm-hmm. And they really not only embraced the league, but they celebrated it, and they keep it, I've kept it organized over the years. And that's when I sort of came in 2009.
Yeah, well, and the model that you use is really interesting because it engages kids without disabilities, mm-hmm. as well. And that's, I mean, pretty ahead of its time for sports as far as, you know, special rec and those kinds of things. They don't necessarily use that model.
No, that's a really good point, Vicki. I mean, again, back at the, you know, if you look back in the inception, getting I compliment again the Champaign-Urbana Kiwanis Club, who became a principal sponsor of the league. Mm-hmm. They sort of helped with some of the initial financing and some of the initial endorsements to get this going. And then the framework, as you said, and I'll just lay that out because it is a bit unique. We play 3 innings or 1 hour. And each game has what we call buddies. And those are people from the community. And they may be little league teams or high school teams or women's softball teams that come out and help work with those kids. And before each game, we have a little session with them to teach them the way we play the game. And each player, in those 3 innings, each player bats every inning. Each player plays in the field, you know, at their corresponding part of that inning, and they all bat, they run the bases, they field. So they actually learn the skills of baseball and have that wonderful one-hour experience.
With the assistance of, yes, some volunteers, and that's an awesome model. So talk a little bit about how it works for an individual player. So somebody who's, because I hear parents say, well, that sounds like it would be a lot of fun for kids to do, but my child is just so disabled that they can't possibly participate in that kind of activity.
Each player is unique and individual, and we treat them accordingly. So the Swan School participates, and they're all wheelchair team. And we have a tee, and that tee comes to the plate, and we'll place, mm-hmm. a ball on that tee. It could be a baseball, it could be a softball, it could be a larger ball. And If the player needs any assistance at the plate, they've got that buddy to help them. And if they can do it on their own, they do it on their own. And many of them learn and love to do it on their own.
Right.
So they learn that over time. Pitching the baseball. The coaches now typically pitch. We've had a few players pitch, but the coaches generally pitch to the players. And each player then can hit a softball, a baseball, we have even a beeper ball for those who have hearing impairments.
I didn't realize that
is phenomenal, and I couldn't believe the success we've had with the beeper ball. So we make each hitter and fielder's experience, we tailor it to them. And in the field, some are great with fly balls and ground balls, some have great throwing skills, some need some assistance with that, and we provide that. And it's usually one-on-one. We usually have one buddy per player.
Now, you don't throw the beeper ball, though. Does that sit on the tee?
We actually throw the beeper ball.
Do you?
It's like a beach ball. So it's
oh, okay.
It's not a real hard baseball.
You're not going to hit somebody in the head.
No, we don't trust our pitchers quite that much yet. But no, it's a big, almost like a beach ball, and it's amazing how well The players can adjust and hit that. It's pretty impressive.
It does sound impressive. Yep. I think they had a beeper ball. I think maybe it was one of the other organizations in town that had a beeper ball tournament for adults mm-hmm. at some point, visually impaired adults. And I thought it would be really interesting to see, but I never did. So hopefully that event will return next year.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the parents, because mm-hmm. I think, you know, one of the real blessings of an organization and an activity like this is that the parents get to spend time with each other and have some support among themselves while watching their kids play ball. Have you got any observations there?
Yeah, in fact, I did not know Tom Jones, but one of the goals of Tom, and it was passed on to me, is this hour of fun and joy and baseball experience for the children is also an hour for the parents.
Mm-hmm.
They get to observe and watch their child. They get an hour to sit in the bleachers. They get they can interact with their kid on the field if they'd like, but many of them just stay and watch and take that hour to just soak it all in, so to speak. So he was very, very emphatic about this is also, this is a family deal. The players are great. Remember them, they come first, but the parents matter too.
But I think more than just relaxing and having fun, it is a chance for parents to get to know each other and, you know, share their experiences with their kids and have friends that really understand their lives and the challenges that they have and that they're experiencing. So I think it's bigger than mm-hmm. maybe what you even understand at this point, because having not had that experience right. as a parent, you know, I think you're bringing advantages to those families that are far beyond what they would experience if they didn't have Challenger League baseball to take on with their children.
And I know Tom Jones would be just delighted to respond and I'm sure he's hearing it, what you're just saying right now. That would mean a great deal to him.
Yeah.
So that's
yeah.
beautiful. Yep.
So you're haven't started practices yet. People can still sign up to be a part of the league?
Sure can. In fact, let me talk to one of our first big events was occurring this Sunday, which is March 16th. The University of Illinois women's softball team mm-hmm. has declared that Challenger Day. They've invited the Challenger League out to participate in the pregame ceremonies. The University of Illinois women's softball team plays Wisconsin that day at noon. So about 11:45, you'll see Challenger League players and coaches and others out there. They can participate in the pregame ceremonies. Then we're going to watch the softball game. And then after the softball game, the U of I women's softball team, and it's just a great opportunity. They're inviting our players out for a little scrimmage with the women's softball team. So that ought to be really fun. And again, thanks to Tyra Perry and all those players who are going to stick around after a Big Ten baseball game and work with the Challenger League kids. That's just great.
That's pretty awesome.
But yeah, you mentioned it. You can still register. Champaign-Urbana Special Recreation, I give them a tip of the hat here. They've been our kind of organizers. They help with registration. They've been a sponsor of the league for many, many years, too. They have mm-hmm. great staff out there at CUSR. You can go to our website, which I'll mention to you right now. It's go to www.tomjonesleague.org, and you can get the information there about registration. You can always call me, Rick Schell, 217-649-2077. We can help you out there. Stephanie Seaman handles all of our registration, does a beautiful job with that. And we'll take registrations now and into the season. So you've mm-hmm. got plenty of time to do that. As I mentioned, we have this great event on Sunday. And then we have Skills Day on April 12th out at CUSR. And that's a day where the players can all gather who are registered, mm-hmm. and we go through kind of a skills evaluation and team them up with their coaches so they get a little preview of what's coming. Then we have open practices out at Ambooks Park on April 22nd and April 29th around 6 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
About an hour of just coming out and having some fun, unorganized, but, well, actually kind of organized. And then our season starts on Saturday, May 3rd with our first games. We play every Saturday and Tuesday evening. Saturday games begin at 8, and we play about every hour. So 8, 9, 10, and then 10, 20. So we have three on Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. We start at 6 o'clock on Tuesday evenings, and then the second game starts at 7, 10, and we play in May and June. Our last games are the end of June. And then okay. we have an all-star game out at Eichelberger Field. Again, the University of Illinois invites us out there. So that's pretty much from registration through our season. And so, we welcome anybody to come and, you know, observe or participate if they're so inclined.
Well, that's a great point. You don't necessarily have to register and join to be a part of it. You can come check it out on the field and see what's going on and then, you know, you talk to some of the other family members and say, how's this working out for your kid?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. In fact, it's neat because a lot of the different associations that we, throughout the year, we work with, you know, the Down Syndrome Network, Autism Network.
Right.
We participate in Disability Fair. We do the walks in town. We do Special Olympics. So there's a lot of crossover there. And it's a great way to come out, just observe and get a sense. And there's a lot of support. As what you said about families earlier and the real help it is to all. I mean, there's a great network that is established out there of support for everyone.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And so thinking about you've done this for a number of years now. What are some of the experiences that you've had or observed of kids that really have blossomed because of this experience? Does anything come to mind?
Well, there are a couple, and because we've sort of expanded and grown, we had I'll just kind of work through a couple of my own and then share a few other neat highlights, if you will.
Yeah.
We were up in Rantoul, and they have a fenced Challenger League field at that new sports complex in Rantoul.
Mm-hmm.
And we've never had a player hit one out of the over the fence for a home run, but we did up there. And it was pretty amazing. And people talk about it to this day. I mean, this young fella hit the ball, and we watched and go, is this going to be the first one ever? And it was. And to this day, we've had that one ball go completely out of the stadium. Uh-huh. So that was pretty special for that young man, family, and all of us that night.
Yeah.
With the University of Illinois, we've had some beautiful experiences. I mean, Nana Egwu, as you'll recall, the big center on the basketball team here mm-hmm. years back, he buddied one night with a young player, and the two of them just hit it off great. And there's some great – it's fun to see how a bonding can occur in a very short period of time, but I wouldn't be surprised if that player and Nana are still talking to this day. That was pretty special. And I would think that would be – if I had one highlight, you could talk to each one of our coaches and buddies about sort of personal experiences and growth they've had with players that have really been very special in art of this day. You know, I have one player that comes up every game and invites me to dinner afterwards. And I say, you know, I'm going to do that some night. And we've done that. So, you know, I'm just saying it's really cute. There are all different ways everybody interacts and those would be just a couple of the things. We've had fun games on the field. One night the field was so bad, but everybody wanted to play. So we actually went out in the grass. We called it the prairie game. And we just made a field out in the prairie. And, you know, nobody noticed any difference.
Mm-hmm.
It set up lawn chairs. Those are the kind of things we just adapt to each situation and let it happen.
Yeah, well, you talked a little bit about how meaningful it was to the kids playing. But I think, too, it's meaningful for the people who are volunteering as well.
Yes.
That keeps them coming back year after year.
Mm-hmm.
So do you still have a need for volunteers, coaches, and people to help out at the field? Are those things any organizational kinds of things that you need help with?
We always welcome volunteers. There are those that can make it out to every game. There's those that can make it once a month, maybe once a week. If you're interested in helping out with this league, just contact me. Celeste Eichelberger handles our volunteers. She does a great job. You can call me, and I'll get her the information, and she can reach out to you. You can help with the games. You can help with the administrative side of things. We welcome any support we can get. And there are a variety of ways you can participate, and we tailor it to the time you've got available.
Yeah, and you have a lot of support from businesses around the community as well. And what kind of contributions do they make to this? They just make monetary donations? Do they pay for you know, team shirts or, I don't know, equipment? What are those things you, that you...
You know, that's a great... Tom, one of Tom Jones, I was told this. Tom Jones says, we're not going to fundraise. I don't want to fundraise. And we said, you know, I wasn't there at the time, but I now know why. Because we've had several people come to us saying, we want to raise money for you. And then that's fine. We don't ask, but people have come to us. So there have been several individuals who have had fundraisers. We have 10 sponsors who provide some financial support for the uniforms and caps.
Mm-hmm.
There are several in town who have done golf tournaments for us. You can give a shout out to a couple of those too. I mean, you know, if you look at ways over the years, there have been individual fundraising activities. I'll say one. I mean, the David Williams Foundation has been very, very helpful, and they've hosted a golf outing for us and are doing another one this year.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, there have been those that have stepped up and raised money for us. Mike Namoff's charity group has stepped up for us, and they've done it. And then all of our sponsors in town have been very, very generous about, you know, helping on an annual basis with uniforms, caps, and equipment.
Yeah, that's great. So volunteer your money, volunteer your time, get out there to Ambucks Field and check out Challenger League Baseball. Why don't you give folks the website one more time before we're done?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Website, www.tomjonesleague.org, and they can also direct you to a Facebook page where we communicate a lot on the Facebook page, so you can link right over to that. And then you can give me a call at 217-649-2077, and that's Rick Schell.
Okay, Rick. Now, before I let you go, you've got a show that you're going to do this week. Talk a little bit about your show on Thursday morning.
Well, again, this is a real privilege. I've been doing jazz here at the station since 2010. I started on Tuesday nights and then migrated over to Thursday mornings. And how did I get here? And Vicki, I always loved this, and I think I've told you this before, but when I retired, my wife, for a holiday gift, gave me air shifter training. And gave
that
me a membership to the station. Yes,
seriously,
it was a gift.
Thank your wife for
I
that.
I always listen to jazz, and she. So I, this is great. So all right, I was a member, and I came down to air shifter training, and next thing I know, I was putting a show proposal together, and that's been a real delight to do the show. I've had just wonderful experiences, and you talk about connecting to the community. I mean, I had no idea how much fun I would have just spinning jazz, but the people that have called in, we've been able to interact with the CU Jazz Festival every fall. We've been able to do so much here with jazz artists in town, and it's just been a real pleasure to do that. I said it's a privilege to have a show here at this station, and it is our community. This is our station, and we try to celebrate that here, and that was one of the greatest gifts she ever gave me.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. You know, you just never know how those things are going to turn out, but you have turned out to be a great asset to WEFT as well. So thank you for coming in today. Thank you for all that you do here. It's really appreciated by many people, more than you know.
Well, Vicki, thank you so much. It's a real pleasure.
Okay, and I'm going to have to play some tunes here to get out.
Pushing me around, but I'll stay. Support for WEFT programming is made possible, in part, by the Champaign Park District. Box Lunch is back. On select Fridays, talented local artists will fill the historic Springer Cultural Center with a wide variety of music, presented by WEFT. For more information, champaignparks.org.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Thanks to Rick Schell for coming in to talk to us about Challenger